Today's show is sponsored by Bob's Red Mill. With natural foods, they support organic, vegan, paleo, and gluten-free lifestyles. Learn more about their commitment to good food for all at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
From Heritage Radio, it's Why Food, a show about people who have transitioned into the food industry from past careers. I'm your host, Patrick McAndrew, and with me today is Hannah Cheng, who founded the revolutionary dumpling restaurant Mimi Cheng's with her sister Marion.
Hey guys, so happy to be here today.
Thanks for joining me on the show.
Glad to be here.
Now, hopefully you won't get too distracted while we're looking out the window and looking at all this pizza and
wine. The pizza looks really good.
Yeah, your time is up soon, so we'll get you in there. So can you tell us a little bit about Mimi Cheng's? We'll go to the backstory as to how you created it, but can you just tell me a little bit about what it is, per se?
Great. So Mimi Cheng's was founded by my sister and myself. We opened in July, almost 3 years ago. We serve our mom's recipes using the highest quality produce that we can find.
Great. And what made that so unique to New York City compared to what we see everywhere else in dumpling restaurants?
So I think kind of how we got started was we were looking around for dumplings that tasted like home cooking and made you feel really good after. And I think that's a really important distinction. When you eat food, you should feel good after. And a lot of these dumpling spots, five for a dollar, you can't even buy a bottle of water in New York City for a dollar. So what do you think you're eating in terms of meat dumplings? So that's how we started thinking that maybe there was a hole in the market that we could fill.
And just on that, I think from what I've seen, because I've read a few articles by you guys, and this is to quote your sister, we believe food is medicine. It's an investment. You either spend money on food now or you can spend money on medicine later.
100%.
Where does that come from? Is that something that you've started to think of later in life, or is that something that you grew up with from your youth, that you were always kind of, you were raised to eat healthy and to be health conscious?
I think it's both. It's twofold. We were definitely raised that way. Our parents were very progressive. They started juicing when we were really young.
But with just to point you out on that, I saw that your father juices onions.
Yeah, gross concoctions. You know, he starts off, we have carrot juice, apple juice. Those sound good. And then he's like, and then onion. No, thanks, Dad. And also now it looks brown. Nobody wants to drink brown juice. So they were always really ahead of their time. They would never let us eat white bread. It was always multigrain. Never let us eat margarine. Always had to be something that was real. But I also think that's an idea that's very, and value that's deeply ingrained in Taiwanese and Asian culture. You know, this idea of qi, is the qi in your body too hot or too cold? If it's too hot, these are the things you eat. For example, if you get a canker sore, that means your qi is too hot and you need something to cool it down, like green bean soup or kiwis. Stuff high in vitamin C.
Can you tell me, I find it so interesting because like you've obviously done extremely well. This restaurant is doing very well. You're working very closely together. There's a lot of values that you have within Mimi Cheng's, mm-hmm. As to how you want the restaurant to be ran and the food. And you've teamed up with people like Dan Barber to put scraps in those dumplings for a month. What was your childhood like growing up? Well, where did you grow up? You grew up in New York
State? So we grew up in Rockland County, which is about 45 minutes north of Manhattan. Kind of typical suburbs, I would say. We were also really lucky enough to travel a lot as kids, because when my mom grew up, she didn't have a lot of money, and one of her life goals was always to travel a lot. So she has wanderlust like you've never met anybody before. So we started traveling when we were two, when we were three, and she didn't care if my dad couldn't take time off. She would just take the two of us as toddlers and go to Thailand or Taiwan by ourselves. She's very courageous.
And were they very, did they fill you with ambition and drive? Were they tough on you when you were growing up?
Yeah, for sure. Tiger mom. She's the definition of tiger mom.
What do you mean by a tiger mom?
I don't even know how to explain it. Okay, so for example, when that article came out about Tiger Bombs, I had two friends from Georgetown send it to me. They are Caucasian Americans, and it was just a question of, what do you think about this article? And I said, you know, it actually describes my childhood to a T. They're like, that's insane. I'm like, why? It's totally normal. I'm like, that's normal. Everyone else I know who's Asian, that's how they grew up.
But when you were growing up, you were, so we know that you were encouraged to eat healthy, or mm-hmm. forced, so that it was for you in your best interest. But then in terms of school, sport, all that stuff, because you're so driven and determined in what you've achieved so far, how did they instill that in you from such a young age?
There were a lot of lessons that I think we were lucky to learn early on. And for example, one of them I remember distinctly in sixth grade. After sixth grade math, the teacher decided if you were going to regular, enriched, or honors math. And the teacher picked me for enriched seventh grade math. And my mom was enraged. She's like, enriched? Why not honors? I'm like, I don't know. I'm not good at math. She was like, don't you ever let anyone tell you if you're good at math or not. And she said, you have to try the honors class. And I said, Mom, I'm not good enough for that class. The teacher told me. And she said, no, try it. If it's too hard, you can always go back to enriched, but you have to give it a shot. And I remember the first month sitting in that seventh grade honors class, I felt like such a fraud. But ever since then, I got straight A pluses, even to AP Calculus BC. So I was like, my mom was right. I'm good at math. You shouldn't listen to what other people say.
And it eventually led you down the road into finance.
It did lead me down the road to finance.
And when you were growing up, it was like, I'm sure back then working in food wasn't necessarily an option, or it wasn't.
Definitely not.
How do your parents react, you know, for to have you and to want to see you achieve and do so well in your life? How did they react when you wanted to open up?
They thought it was a horrendous idea.
Yeah, and
they challenged
us
many times. They said, you do not need a college degree to open a Chinese takeout restaurant. And my sister and I told them, this is not your traditional Chinese takeout restaurant. You know, they're picturing walking here with pictures on the menu board and takeout menus. And my mom's brother actually had opened a traditional Chinese restaurant in New Hampshire and did really well. But he said it is the hardest business ever and always refused to help us whenever we asked him for help because he couldn't condone our decision.
Wow.
Yeah. But once we got into it, my parents, when we first opened, they came for 2 weeks to help us and they ended up staying for 3 months. We called it my dad's internship. He ran everywhere on a city bike. He went to Home Depot. You know, he fixed all the little things. My mom was there helping in the kitchen. The first night we ran out of dumplings, so my mom and I were wrapping dumplings together in the kitchen.
So before we get into that, because I'm sure there's plenty to talk about in the opening stages of that, we don't have your sister here today, but we can talk about your life and where you came from before going into Mimi Cheng's. Mm-hmm. So what did you study in college?
I studied finance. Almost doubled majored in accounting until I realized I hated accounting. After taking the hardest semester of the accounting major, I decided I didn't want to torture myself anymore. And then I minored in Mandarin.
Wow. And were you a super focused person in college? Did you really kind of grind down, get the work done all the time?
I think my friends would describe me as that for sure. They said I never left the library, which is not true because I had friends.
And where did that leave you after that then, after finishing college?
So I went to JP Morgan. I worked on the rates trading floor as an intern after my junior year and then up until last year.
Up until last year?
Yeah.
I didn't realize you were working there up until so recently.
We overlapped for 2 years, yeah.
How did you manage that?
I didn't have much of a social life.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it must have been pretty tough.
It was tough. But I think when you're doing something that you love, not to sound trite, but it actually gives you energy, whereas, you know, when you're doing something that takes up all your time and your energy and it drains you, that's what I ask people. Like, what charges you? That's what you should pursue.
And when you got into finance, did you realize that this is something that you really wanted to do? Did it excite you getting in there at the start?
Finance? Oh, yeah. It was my dream job.
It was?
And I don't regret any of my time there. I really believe that in your life, there's seasons for everything. And I had a wonderful experience there. The people I worked with, so smart, challenged, it really forced me to grow.
We had Adam Eskin on the show a few months ago, mm-hmm. and he was talking about how working in finance helped him so much and shaped him into how he operated and ran his business. Talking about small things and how there was so much focus on small details. And even if you didn't know, if someone was going to call you out on it. Did you find that a lot of the learning that you had from finance helped you later down the road?
Definitely. I always tell people that working in a busy kitchen is a lot like working on a trading floor. One, you have to like the person that you're next to. Two, you have to be able to cooperate. And three, you have to handle stress in a very quick and loud environment.
Yeah, and that, well, you're either going to learn by fire in a restaurant, or at least if you have a little bit of practice beforehand, that works in finance.
Yeah, that's what we say in the restaurant too. We're like, you know what? Just throw them in. Don't let him drown, but, you know.
And then your sister, she also landed her dream job right out of college.
Yep, so she's so tenacious. So she went to University of Maryland. There was no fashion major there. She was a business major, and she wanted to break into the fashion world, but like finance, fashion houses really recruit at certain schools. So she stalked a bunch of people on LinkedIn until somebody at Dolce & Gabbana responded, and that's how she got her first leg into the door and then ended up at Burberry. And loved
then,
it.
And then was she the first one that took the step away from that career into the food business?
Yeah, because her team of six had been whittled down to two. It was her and an assistant. And she was working 13-hour days, getting paid a fashion salary. So not that hard to walk away from.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, we've been talking about this for a year. If we want to do it, we have to do it now. We don't have any responsibilities. We don't have a mortgage. We don't have families. We don't have kids. If we got to either, you know, shape up or shut up about it.
Hey, it's Kathy Irway, the host of Eat Your Words. Today I'm here with Camilla Salisbury, author of Bob's Red Mill Everyday Gluten-Free Cookbook, 281 Delicious Whole Grain Recipes. We're going to get to the bottom of this gluten-free craze. So why aren't people eating gluten, and what does gluten-free really mean?
Well, there are two main reasons why people are deciding to go gluten-free these days. And the first one is really serious. It's for people who have celiac disease, and it's a pretty serious condition. But then there is also a growing number of people with gluten intolerance or gluten sensitivity, and they're trying out gluten-free diets because they find that eating foods without gluten just makes them feel better.
Okay, got it. But what actually makes something gluten-free?
Well, what makes something gluten-free is essentially that it doesn't have any of the protein, gluten, in it. And a lot of people are surprised to learn that many grains do not contain gluten, when in fact just a very small number of grains do.
Does anyone offer truly gluten-free options?
Well, Bob's Red Mill really understands gluten-free options, and that means they separate their grains during the manufacturing process, and so they're testing each batch at every step of the way for purity to ensure that it's gluten-free. So when it says on the package that it's gluten-free, you can be assured that it is gluten-free.
All right, so gluten-free listeners out there craving some steel-cut oats can pick up a pack of Bob's Red Mill and rest assured you're getting the real deal. Learn more about Bob's Red Mill and all the gluten-free products that they offer at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
Where would you guys have eaten before you founded Mimi Chang's if you wanted to get good Taiwanese food or good Chinese food?
Well, our mom would send us food.
So it was in your own kitchen. That's where you would have got the good stuff.
And then they moved to the West Coast and we ran out of the goods.
And that's what led to Mimi Chang's.
Exactly. It's really just out of desire to eat.
And you feel it, definitely.
Definitely.
So you've mentioned that if you realized how tough it was and how stressful it was to open up a restaurant, that you never would have done it.
I think we would have been too scared to. Ignorance is bliss.
Amazingly, yes. But what were some of the things that really were a struggle at the start to get the restaurant opened and get it operated?
Finding the right people. People who are trustworthy, responsible. It's a very different crowd than working in finance, for example. Just even getting people to show up or text you, like, hey, I'm running late. Okay, the shift started at 9. You're texting me at 9:45. You're going to be late. I already know you're late. Little things like that.
Yeah.
And if you only have a team of two people, one person doesn't show up, you know, it's a big deal.
And how about things like financing a restaurant and stuff like that? Because surely in New York City, it's very easy to be in other parts of the world and have an idea and want to produce good food. But in New York City, the major thing that's standing in your way is the level of investment that has to go into it. And the idea that it's actually that you're going to get a return on that. Not necessarily you as the owner, but the people that are going to put money into it,
right?
Because there's such a common occurrence of these restaurants failing.
So we decided not to raise outside money because we want to do things our way without having necessary to listen to anyone. So we just raised money. It's me, my dad, my mom, and my aunt.
Wow, that's a very tight tight group.
Yeah,
you're very lucky to be able to do that.
I'm very lucky to be able to do everything that I want, right? And I was lucky to have a job that enabled me to save money to now do this, because I did that other job for almost 8 years. And I'm lucky to have parents that would believe in us enough to throw some money down. And yeah.
And then on your outset, because... like, when I think of places that are new in terms of their approach to food, I kind of imagine that it will be some sort of a recreation of Nam Wa, like taking that kind of old setting and just putting kind of more approachable food in it.
Mm-hmm.
But yours is totally different. Where did you decide that you were going to kind of take the modern space with traditional food and make it all gel together?
You know, it wasn't really even much of a thought. It's just how we live our lives. The decor, the modern space, that's what our apartment looks like. If you walked in, you'd be like, yes, this makes sense. Why Mimi Trang's looks the way it does. And food, that's just how we eat. So really, the restaurant and the brand, everything that goes into it, it's just us. So sometimes, you know, we get critiques of, oh, this isn't authentic. Well, everyone's background experience is different, right? Where you come from, you know, my mom was born in Thailand, then she moved to Taiwan, then she moved to the States. That's going to be very different than someone who grew up in Italy, then moved to Beijing, and then India or something like that.
Right.
So everyone's authentic experience is different. So this is what feels like home and real to us.
And your mom is obviously a very special lady in what she's done for you growing up. She's also the focal point of this restaurant because it's named after her, right?
Yeah, she is a force. She's 5'2 and larger than life.
God, I'd love to meet her. That sounds like a perfect description. We'll have to get her in next time around. All right, stay posted. We've got a round two coming up in White
Everyone.
Food.
We have regulars who come in and they're like, where's your mom? You know, what's your mom like? Where is she? Is she here? She's so funny. She laughs at all her own jokes. She speaks 8 different languages. She makes friends with everybody. You know, one little example of her, we were at a restaurant in Chinatown a long time ago, and we had ordered some sizzling platter, and the waiter who was bringing it over spoke Spanish, and she was just starting to learn Spanish, because this guy from Mexico had come to our Chinese church, and he wanted to learn Mandarin, and my mom found out. So she said, if you teach me Spanish, I'll teach you Mandarin. So they had a language class every week. And the guy is bringing the sizzling platter over. And at the same time, it was such a New York moment. The waiter says, be careful in Chinese. And my mom said, cuidado. And they just looked at each other and laughed.
And what is so special about her homemade dumplings? What sets them apart? Naturally enough, your ingredients, you have a focus on organic and local produce. That's going to carry a weight no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But what is, now I know we're not going to get any special tips on how to make them like you guys do, but what separates them? What makes them so wonderful, so fluffy, so tasty?
Well, I think it's the ingredients that we use. She always used the best ingredients. She always used organic meat. She used vegetables from her own garden whenever it was in season. And you can't replicate that. If you use crappy ingredients and you want to throw MSG and stuff to basically boost the flavor, it tastes like a fraud compared to the real thing.
Have you had many people that have come and said that they didn't like them because of the lack of MSG or because of those kind of tastes?
Well, people have come in and said that they were bland because there's not enough salt or fat in them. But a lot of places beef up. It's easy. It's like the idea of, okay, I can make anything taste good if I throw a stick of butter in it.
Yeah.
It's the idea of that restraint and how you feel after that I think speaks for itself.
Yeah, there's a place close to me and they do Vietnamese food, and he sometimes struggles with business because he refuses to put any MSG in there.
Yeah.
And people come and say, but it doesn't taste like the pho I'm used to. And he's, well obviously, because it's the real way that it should be made. And have you gotten back to, have you had many family members from Taiwan come out and try them? And
they love it. They especially love the monthly specials because they're such a fun fusion thing that you can't get. One of my cousins, Howard, he grew up in Taipei. He went to college at UC San Diego, and he came when we were doing the breakfast special with Sir Kensington's, and he said he loved it because it reminded him of college and getting breakfast sandwiches.
What did you have in those dumplings?
So we had cage-free scrambled eggs, maple breakfast sausage that we made from scratch in-house, because sausage I love, but creeps me out at some places. Cheddar cheese, sautéed onions, and then as an ode to how we eat things growing up, we put a sprinkle of everything seasoning on top. So we made friends with bagel shops, and we would say, can we buy some pounds of your everything seasoning? Because growing up, we grew up near a bakery called Rockland Bakery, and you have just all this fresh bread coming by, and when they did bagels at the edge, all the everything seasoning would be collected, and you just took a big bag and scooped it up.
Amazing.
We would sprinkle it on eggs, on toast. So good.
How did you combine all those ingredients into one dumpling?
And then we served them with the cutest little jars of Sir Kensington's ketchup, which is our favorite. Has no MSG in it. Very clean.
What monthly special are you doing at the moment?
We're doing a truffle foie gras soup dumpling with Daniel Hume from 11 Madison Park.
Wow. How did these connections happen with these monthly specials?
Just through friends.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And when did you start it? When did you start the idea to do this?
So we first opened in July, and then we started our first monthly special in September.
Okay. And can you tell me a little bit about what you did with the Dan Barber special? Because it's pretty incredible with what he's doing with the wasted.
So impressive. He's brought so much light to this idea of food waste and our preconceived notions of what's edible and what's not edible. And so we knew we had to reach out to him and see if he'd be interested in doing a wasted dumpling. And we were so thrilled that he was. And I think also the coolest part was that our guests who came in, they love the idea. They love that, you know, half the money was going to charity. And the fact that they were just cool enough to give it a try.
What ingredients did you have in it?
So we had kale, we had carrots, we had zucchini, we had shiitake mushrooms.
What kind of parts are you putting in that?
So all different parts. So for example, we would use the mushroom juice that the shiitakes were soaked in, or in the mushroom stems. Mushroom stems are totally edible.
Yeah.
But oftentimes people just only eat the cap. But right. Why? There's no good reason, right? Except that that's what they're used to.
Yeah, it's what you're used to seeing.
Or we would do zucchini peels, the ribbons from the zucchini skin.
Do you eat kiwi with the skin on?
No.
Do you eat kiwi with the skin on, Nikki? No, I eat kiwi with the skin on. It's
delicious. It's too itchy, though, for me, the hair.
I like it. I just bite off the little top part of it, and then I'll eat the rest of it. But I have had people look at me like I was a cereal killer.
That's so wasted of you.
I'm such a... Yeah, I like that. I'm going to say that from now on. That's going to be my new term. That's so wasted. All right, back to the real business.
Okay.
Okay, so we've got Mimi Cheng's. You and your sister opened it up 2 years ago, the first location?
It's going to be 3 years in July.
Going to be 3 years in July. So Hannah and Marion are running the shop. How do you balance it out? Who takes... Because generally when there is... I can refer to you guys as a couple because it is two of you. Mm-hmm. Someone takes the front of house, someone takes the back of house, and you make that switch over.
So we do both.
We take turns.
So my sister's best friend from college, Mina, she also works with us. We call ourselves a triangle. And we all take turns. So we rotate between the two stores and we do whatever is necessary to get the job done. Doesn't matter.
But I'm sure, and like at this stage, you must be very capable of multitasking, but I'm sure both of you have your own strengths, especially from your various backgrounds.
Yeah.
Where does yours lie and where does hers lie?
So if we look at it more on a high level, she does more of the operations, like the day-to-day stuff. And I do all the business side, the accounting, payroll, forward-looking stuff, strategy. But I would say we're a Venn diagram. There's definitely overlap.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. A very egalitarian business.
Yeah.
So you had the first one. It was a raging success from the start. You ran out of dumplings at the beginning, right?
It was scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was that first day like? How did it feel?
Madness. I cried myself to sleep.
Tears of joy?
No, tears of scared. I was scared.
Why? You had just sold out of dumplings.
It's true, but we had no idea what we were in for. We weren't prepared for it. We were up till 3 a.m. prepping for the next day. And I was horrified that we had signed a 10-year lease and that this is what the rest of my life was going to look like.
And when did that kind of peel off and it didn't continue going like that?
I don't know. You know, it was a really good memory, but I remember calling my friend Nick, one of the guys who started Sweetgreen, and I said, I hate you because you told me this was going to be a good idea. And he laughed and he said, I promise it only goes up from here. He said, you better be right. And he was right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when did you open up the Nolita location?
We opened up in October. We had a bunch of issues with Con Ed that basically postponed it for 9 months.
9 months? Mm-hmm. So the restaurant was ready to open?
It was ready to open. But we didn't have enough electricity.
But is that not their job to provide electricity?
It is, but Con Ed...
And why wouldn't they be giving you electricity when that's what you're asking for?
You tell me. Government bureaucracy. They're not really government, but, you know, they basically are.
How did you get it resolved in the end?
Our friend Thomas from Estella and Cafe Altro Paradiso, I ran to him, told him about the problem. You know, that's the amazing thing about the hospitality business is the sense of community.
Yeah.
And he said, we had the same problem. You need to contact all your local politicians and representatives. And I did. And that was the first day ever in months that Con Ed ever gave me a response.
Wow.
Somebody called me and left me an actual voicemail.
That must have been infuriating.
Infuriating. But you know what was more infuriating is that my Italian godmother, sorry, my grandmother, Betty Quintano, she told me to do that 6 months prior. But I was just like, oh, grandma, that's so cute, because she writes President Obama every day. And I listened to her. Pen pals. I was like, do you have a response? And then, of course, I do it. And I was like, I should have listened to her. She always knows what she's talking about.
Wise lady.
Yeah, she's wise.
That's shocking. I can't believe that. So for 9 months, you had a restaurant sitting there waiting to be open. That's totally opposite to what you generally hear, that, you know, you've set an opening deadline and none of it's ready. And then suddenly you have to open up to a half full, you know, half completed restaurant. But it was the opposite for you guys.
Yeah.
And how is there a difference between the East Village location and the Nolita location?
Definitely. So Nolita has more space. It has a larger menu because, you know, now it was our second time around. We could actually build out a kitchen now that we've had some experience.
Yeah.
East Village, when we first opened, it was just, okay, we think this is a good idea. This is what we need. We've never worked in a restaurant before. So there was a lot of, you know, quirks to it after we actually opened. So with the ability and more equipment, we're able to do some more creative things.
And has there been an element of trying to kind of merge the quality of food, yet interacting with the foodie culture that is New York? Because you're across the road from a place, Cha Cha Matcha, which boggles me. I know matcha is very good for you, but that place has just done it so well. It just brings people in for the element of cool. I would imagine that if you put matcha in front of half of those people 5 years ago and just said, please drink this, they would say it's earthy and disgusting. But
yeah,
because it's pink and green and very cute, everyone wants to have it. And
they do a killer job. I was there today.
Yeah, they do. They do an amazing job and do amazing business. But there is that switch between, you know, do you want to make your food look beautiful for Instagram and for business like that, or do you want to put your focus in on the quality of the food that's inside of the dumplings?
Well, I don't think those two are mutually exclusive. I don't think you can make a food only for Instagram, and I don't think you can only make a food that's really, really tasty but not visually appealing, because humans, we eat with our eyes.
But is that something that you have in mind? I'm sure it is, you know.
We like the way things look. We like things to look a certain way. So I guess to a certain extent we do, but we don't do it for the gram.
Okay. I like it. God, you're giving me so many good sayings here today. We'll have to get you on. I think we'll have to get you in for intros and outros from now on. And what's the step going forward now with Mimi Cheng's? The two locations are doing very well for you guys. Are you going to look to stay in New York, or would you like to go further afield?
I think we'd love to go further afield, but we, you know, we like to take things slow and on our own time and when we feel moved to do something. So Nolita just opened, you know, half a year ago, so it's still pretty new.
But you're driven ladies. You have a lot of things in your mind. I'm sure there's some strategies in the background of where you want to take this.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, we don't like to speak about things before they come to fruition.
I understand. My job of trying to lure something out of you has failed. We're just going to keep it at the two restaurants for now.
My fiancé, he likes to say that I basically am the epitome of this Lil Wayne lyric, that real G's move in silence like lasagna.
There she goes with another one. Well, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show here today.
Likewise.
I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for having us, and thanks to all our listeners out there.
Yeah, and where can people find you when they want to go to Mimi Cheng's and try your amazing dumplings?
So we have two locations. The first one, the East Village, is on 2nd between 11th and 12th, and then our second location is on Broome between Mott and Mulberry.
Wonderful. And they're beautiful spaces, really welcoming.
Thank
and whenever
you.
I've been in there, the staff is great. The second location, no cash. Is that true? Both are no cash. No. Okay.
So generally people are okay with that. Sometimes you get, you know, one out of every 20, they tell you you're ruining the world. But for us, it just made sense for security reasons.
Okay. Well, it's good to know ahead of time when you're going in. Well, thanks very much for coming on. And thanks so much to Nikki for organizing this from Care of Chan to get it all together. I also want to extend my thanks to Heritage Radio Network for providing this platform of conversation. Heritage Radio relies on its listeners' support. So to please donate to the station, visit heritageradionetwork.org and click the right corner of the page to support. If you enjoyed today's show, please rate and subscribe to the show. That small action has a massive reaction with the show's popularity. Thanks for listening to today's show as well. If you ever want to get in touch, please email me at yfood@heritageradionetwork.org or you can find me on Instagram at yfoodpodcast. Thanks, guys. Until next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.